welcome to Risky Business 2, or RB2 as we know it. I'm Patrick Gray. Risky Business 2 is brought to you by Symantec, the big yellow box. Please go and subscribe to this podcast feed, the RB2 feed at risky.biz/feeds. Now, in this presentation, a keynote from the ShakaCon conference in Hawaii, BT security consultant Luke McCormie discusses various methods of getting around corporate defences, both physical and digital. The talk is about corporate espionage, and it's well presented indeed. Luke is a senior staffer at the DEF CON security conference and also contributes to several computer security organisations, including the Root Cellar Security Team, 303 and Security Tribe. Risky.biz correspondent Paul Craig was at ShakaCon and recorded this keynote, and you'll be hearing more content Paul recorded there over coming weeks. So I'll pick up Luke's talk now as he discusses a few oldie but goodie style tricks. I've trimmed a bit from the front of his talk because he sort of really found his pace once he got going about 15 minutes in. So here it is, Luke McCormie's keynote talk from ShakaCon. Enjoy.
Lot of different things you can do that can really help you in social engineering. Bogus emails, this is the same type of deal. We typically integrate these with client-side attacks to where I will send out an email or a spoofed email that looks like it's coming from your head of human resources, and I'll tell you that it's an absolute requirement that you go and visit this website and complete the technology survey that's there and run the application so that we can make sure that we're up to date for all of our FIPS requirements around asset inventory. It's frighteningly successful. Usually when I do these types of attacks, we have, you know, we'll send it out to 40 to 50 people. We'll have 30 or 40 that'll actually click on it. Funny thing about the website that we direct them to is that, just as you heard with the previous attack, we'll mirror a corporate website, like a web login for email, and then instead of having the code submit your credentials to the back-end server, we'll just harvest it and then redirect you to the next page. So not only do we get you to launch an application on your machine that allows us to have remote access because it'll tunnel back out and connect to our servers, we also capture your corporate identification, your username, your password, everything else that we need so that we can log in via the VPN and have access inside your network. Physical intrusion, I'm going to not really touch on because we're going to hit that here in a little bit. Media and CD key dropping. This is going back to using autorun exactly the way I was talking about, same type of a deal. You can create a very simple three-line autorun .inf file, put it on a USB key, and do a little bit of formatting, or simply straight onto a CD-ROM, and you can have it launch all kinds of applications the moment that somebody tries to access the CD. Phone calls, we'll get in a little bit more here in just a few minutes, and face-to-face conversation, and role-playing. This is your standard stuff, trying to walk in and saying that you work for a specific telco or that you are from the gas company and you're wanting to look at the, you know, that you need to look at the main valves or that you've got a DMARC that's not responding correctly. Here's an example of an autorun.inf that I actually used. One of the disks that I had set out there that you saw on the last slide, we went to a very large company that's responsible for genetic research in Southern California. We had taken their company name, put it on the top of the CD-ROM, and then wrote payroll for the specific month that we were there. We walked through on a public tour of the facility, visited the bathrooms, and dropped into a couple mail rooms. No secure areas, no secure access, just the standard walk through and get a tour of the facility. And we dropped 12 CDs. An hour and a half later, after we were done, Ryan Jones and I, the gentleman that I was working with at the time, we went back to the hotel and we had 8 agents deploy. We were able to compromise 8 machines. Cool thing about it when we started looking at it was we're like, well, you know, we wonder if this is one of those situations where it was like one machine and a couple people were carrying it around. You know, it's totally the curiosity killed the cat. But we started looking, and the next morning, by the time we'd gotten everything done, we'd actually harvested about 20 machines. Funny thing was is some of the machines didn't have the proper IP address and range that they were supposed to be coming from, and we'd found out that people had found the CDs and being intelligent, not wanting to look at them on a computer at work, took them home and compromised their home computers with them. So we had to apologize there, but it was one of those where if anybody tried to open up this CD-ROM to look at the August payroll file that was there, the System32 file, which is actually hidden, there is an application in there called launch.exe. For this specific example, we were using Core Impact and we had exported an agent, but I highly recommend using Metasploit. MSF Payload is a tool that comes with Metasploit. H.D. Moore created the tool set along with a couple other gentlemen. And the MSF Payload will allow you to create different executables and different types of code. I believe you can export in C, JavaScript, ActiveX, a couple different things. But it makes it to where you can have them connect back to you. You can launch VNC servers on the other side. There's a lot of stuff that you can do with the tool. You'll actually have to dig in, or I'll be more than happy to answer questions around it later. But the big point here is that when that executable is launched, the executable calls out to our server that's sitting on our network, establishes an egress connection out through the firewall that we can then use to tunnel back through, and we have direct access with administrative control on their machine. These are pretty cool. But the reason that I liked this one so much is that we weren't doing any kind of privilege escalation. So we had some good people that were trained right. What do you do when you find media that you don't know what it is? What are you supposed to do in a corporate environment? You turn it in. And if it says payroll, who do you think they turned it into? Exactly. And accounting went, I don't know what this CD is. Let's look at it. Bam. And they put it on there, so we were able to compromise their internal financial network, which was segmented away from the rest of the area. And the big lesson that they learned is that financial networks and financial segments should not be connected to the internet. You shouldn't allow those people to go out and be browsing the internet and playing with other things. Because if they would have been restricted the way that they were and isolated the way that they should have been, we wouldn't have ever been able to establish a connection out from that machine. Caller ID spoofing. There are some really cool applications out there. You can build your own Asterisk server, and you can do it yourself at your home. But I actually, on my G1, I absolutely love SpoofApp. SpoofApp is an application free for download. You can go to spoofcard.com and buy minutes. And for $10, you can get 60 minutes where you can spoof your phone number. That phone number on the top is my number. The number right below it is the United States Secret Service Cybersecurity Division in Denver, Colorado. So when I call that, it actually makes it look as if that number is coming from the Secret Service. Now, why is this beneficial? I'll call up all the time. I'll call people from their corporate headquarters phone numbers, and I'll tell them that I need them to visit a specific website or that we're making some changes and we're trying to back up a database, and you know they're more than welcome to come into the office and log in if they'd like, or they could provide me their username and password so that I can make sure that all of the data gets moved during the backup. You can also switch your voice from being a man to a woman. You can leave it normal. You can manipulate it the other way if you want to be a guy and have a really low voice. You can switch it over to man. And the best part is that it allows you to record your calls. It's part of the reason that I push this app so much. Yeah?
A quick question on your provider side.
Yep.
Anything logged on outgoing? In other words, you're using this application to spoof your number, but...
Yes.
Still making a connection with your ID, right, to your provider.
You are, absolutely. And it is one of those situations. I'm not recommending that you use this for malicious or illegal purposes, because one of the things that SpoofCard is very big about telling you is that if they get hit with a subpoena, they will absolutely work with the courts. That goes back to why you should build your own Asterisk server. But the reason I like using this for work is, the biggest reason is I've got the record call feature down at the bottom, which makes it really nice when I'm doing POC and I'm doing playback for whoever I'm working for so that they can actually listen to the phone call itself. It's one thing to sit there and give them a dialogue or a breakdown, but if they can actually listen to how the phone call worked, it sets a better example and it lets them know. Good social example. There was a gentleman a couple of years back who went over to an Amro bank in Antwerp. And this guy set up a account for a safety deposit box, and he was coming in and out and in and out, and he was bringing jewels in and bringing jewels out. Pretty standard thing in this area of the world. Funny thing is, the guy spent almost a year going back and forth. He got on first name basis. He was actually dating one of the tellers at the bank. He was just a gentleman. And the whole thing was that one day he walked in. Still, no one knows how this guy did this. But he walked out with 120,000 carats of other people's diamonds and jewels, disappeared. No one has seen him since. Very possibly the single largest bank robbery of all time. Did it without guns, did it without explosives, and did it in broad daylight without being caught. I still don't understand how he was able to do it, but I'm just absolutely blown away at this guy's work, and I'd like to study it a bit more, but it just blew my mind. So trying this at home, you guys want to start doing this and you want to start applying some of the stuff that we're talking about here to make it to where you guys can look at it. You need to understand the process. Start, obviously, you guys should be very familiar with this flow. You gather information so that you understand your client and your target. You gather information and do vulnerability assessment so that you can understand where weaknesses may exist. You select the target. You plan around how you're going to attack the target, and then you execute. Some of the big things to look at here when you're doing this is that you need to be able to find good research methods and useful information. We're going to go over that a bit. And on vulnerability analysis, you're not just talking about the computers again. We need to move away from that mindset. It is a key part, but it's not the part. I always look internal, external, hired, and professional. And what I mean by hired there, if you guys work in a very, very large business or large building, Hawaii has a lot of them here, and you've got cleaning crews that are coming in 6 p.m. at night or whatever and cleaning, are those cleaning crews hired by your business? They're probably hired by the building management company. Have they done background checks on them? Was the person that's cleaning your floor, did they just get released from prison for embezzlement? You have no idea. And this is what I'm talking about when you do vulnerability analysis. You've got to look at all of the different areas of exposure that you have. Just saying, yeah, from 8 to 5, we're locked down tight. You've got to have a card to get in here. Nobody gets in here without a photo ID or a card or whatever. Well, how's the janitor getting in at 6 p.m.? And you've got to be aware of that stuff, and you've got to think about those risks. Same thing with target selection. How am I going to target them? Is that going to be something that I can do? Can I go look at the building and watch the cleaning crew going in and out? Can I go to the nearest, like, you know, convenience store or clothing store and pick up an outfit that looks like them and be able to walk into the business and not have my ID or my badge checked? And on planning, when I talk about planning, I don't say, well, here's a vulnerability here. Here's MSO 3027. It's RPC DCOM. We're going to go ahead and hit that because we've got 1.5 million exploits that we know are staple. We'll target that. What I mean by planning is develop multiple plans of attack before you execute. What happens if plan A fails? What happens if plan B gets stomped? You know, you need to figure out a way to be able to execute. And Chris Nickerson had a great analogy for this, which was flow like water. Water and electricity go to the path of least resistance. And when you're functioning and working in a security environment and you're trying to find different vulnerabilities and different ways to exploit or to gain access, if you hit up against a wall, just like water, move along the wall and try to figure out the next best way to get in. Don't allow that to be a stop for you. And when you actually execute the attack, think about what you're needing to get and get out. This is not something where you need to sit around and get greedy. I can't tell you how many times when we've been 3, 4 o'clock in the morning breaking into a bank, breaking into some kind of facility, we've got a backpack full of financial data. We've got keys to the facility. We've gotten all kinds of different stuff done. And in your mind, you're always like, oh, I want more, I want more, I want more. But the problem is the more exposure that you have, the higher risk that you are facing in getting captured or caught in the type of work that you're doing. So process of the attack, I've touched on these a bit. Again, the reason that I'm putting these up here is so that you guys, when I start talking about internal direct or external direct or indirect, you guys can kind of understand what I'm talking about on the different styles. Most of what I'm going to show you and give you guys an example here are actually blended exotic attacks. So for remote information gathering, I'll be more than happy to give a demonstration of any one of these to anybody here that wants to play with it. Multigo is a great tool. This tool set allows you to take a name or to take a phone number or to take an email address or anything and do some very impressive data mining on it. It used to be called Paterva, and they've recently changed that. You can download Multigo for free. Be sure to get the community version, Multigo CE. And the tool is absolutely amazing because it'll chain, and you can just jump and jump and jump. I use it all the time to gather information about my clients so that I have client names, so that I know the people that are working there. I know who the executives are. I know who's on the IT staff. I can find out what kind of public trading has gone on. I can harvest phone numbers for social engineering and grab email addresses for kicking out those emails that I was talking about. It's a really good tool. Spokio is a tool that allows you to harvest and mine social networking sites. If you go to spokio.com, you can sign up for free. You don't have to give them a real email address or a real name. You just have to give them something that they can add. The cool thing about Spokio is you put in a person's name and it'll show you Facebook, MySpace, LiveJournal, every single one of it. You can read every single piece there. So after I do Maltego and I harvest a bunch of these names and I know some of the people that I may be wanting to attack, especially in like the IT world, head of IT or those types of things, I'll go learn what their hobbies are. You know, what movie did they just watch? What books do they read? What kind of things do they like to do on their own time? Building those profiles can really help me target these people, and it makes it easier when I get presented. If I actually get captured while I'm on site or somebody comes up and says, you know, who are you? It's like, oh, yeah, I'm working with John Roberts at IT, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I sit there and I talk back and forth, and I can kind of have this dialogue with them that makes them relaxed because it's a name they recognize. And I'm supposed to be working with IT, and it's an IT name that you've got. Again, planning is key to being successful. Google hacking is a good one. Johnny Long has the Google hacking database. I don't believe that it's actually being updated right now, but it is still sitting on the website and it's available. There are a lot of little different types of things that you can do to manipulate Google searches to find very specific data. Big thing to remember is that Google is the single largest data mining project on this earth, and that it was originally developed as a data mining project by the guys that started it during their college years. It wasn't supposed to be a search engine. They were using it to dig for lots and lots of data very quickly. Hoovers, if you're not familiar with it, is probably the number one business intelligence website on the internet. You can also sign up for a free account on this one. This will give you every bit of information about a company. Anything that is publicly related, Hoovers has it on record and will be able to get it for you. You can see the last stock trades that the people that run the company made. It's just crazy. Public records is also a good one. And then Google Maps. I always use Street View and I always use Satellite View to plot and plan how I'm going to engage a target and how I'm going to be able to escape. I plan different methods of approach, different methods of attack. And I'll be honest, most of the time after doing that, when I actually go on site and look at the building, a lot of the stuff that I plan out isn't necessarily going to be the way that I execute. But it does give me a familiarity with the environment, the neighborhood, and the business that I wouldn't have had before. So before you go, one of the big things that I like to stress with people is that they need to prepare themselves for the attack. Your brain is the single most important tool that you have. In law enforcement and in military type work, they'll teach you conditioning, mental conditioning. And one of the things that they do is a stoplight. Most people out there, the sheeple, as we like to call them, live in a green state. These are people that are very comfortable. They feel very secure in their lives. They don't worry about threat and risk around them. They just go about their daily life. This is by far a majority of the people on this earth. Yellow is an alert. This is aware of your surroundings. You're attentive. You're watchful. Most hacker mindsets and most people that I know in the security community kind of live or stay in a condition yellow. This is the kind of thing where when you go sit down at a restaurant, you probably don't like to have your back to a door. You know, it's one of those where you're aware of different people that are coming in and out of the business. The big key is that if you're going in to go do espionage work against your own company or someone else for that matter, heightened awareness is where you need to be. You need to have your mind ready to react very, very quickly. You need to expect things to go wrong because I promise they will. And you need to be able to prepare for the worst situation. This will give you an ability to react very quickly. And it's important because when someone is challenging you, or you have ran into a security guard, or something has occurred, or maybe things have changed, you need to be able to have instantaneous response, because if you delay, somebody's like, who are you? They're not going to believe you no matter what you tell them after that, because you've had those delays and those pauses. People will pick up on a lot of that subconsciously. So the big key is sitting down. I actually, just personal thing, I'll sit down on my hotel bed, I'll sit there and I'll think about the attack, I'll close my eyes, I'll breathe, I'll think about how long I'm going to be doing this, how long it's going to take me to execute. Do I have all my tools that I need? Do I have a bottle of water? I may be stuck in a ceiling somewhere for 12 hours waiting for business to close if I don't get out in time the next day. You've got to plan and prepare for this type of thing. Some of the things that you can do once you're on site for planning and preparation, go find out what kind of clothing they're wearing. What do the badges look like? How do people interact? Is it a very straight and kind of boring place like a lot of government facilities that you'll see in the Northeast? Or is it like California or Hawaii where everybody's very cheerful and happy to have conversation? Can you get a business card from somebody inside the corporation? If so, go make fake business cards for yourself and put your real name on it. That way, if they ask to check your ID, it actually lines up. Maybe they won't be able to find you on the company database, but you're right there. They've got a business card. It looks good. Can you set up some kind of a site visit? A lot of places, depending upon your target, will allow you to come in and tour the facility, Or maybe you can call up and say, hey, I'm a third-party vendor. We've got a new solution. We know that you guys are specking out different types of vulnerability remediation projects right now. We'd love to give you a server to throw on your network and play with for, you know, a couple months. If you guys like it, great. If you don't, we'll be more than happy to take it back. It's a great opportunity for you to be able to walk in the front door and hand your target a rooted device that you can use as a footprint inside of their network that will allow you to compromise other systems. You can use it as a pivotal point. And you have to think about what tools you need. The reason that I put up the thrift store picture, it's my favorite place to shop when I first get into a town. I find out what my client is doing. If I'm going into town and I'm going to hack SBC, I'm going to hack AT&T, I'm going to hack somewhere like this, I can guarantee that every little thrift store in that part of town where that business is at has company shirts. When people quit their jobs, they give their company shirts and a lot of this type of stuff over to thrift stores because it's the nice thing to do. It makes it perfect for people like you and me that are trying to do this work because it makes it very easy to dress appropriate to where people can't tell who you are and where you're coming from. Tools of the trade. This is my standard pack that I'm using when I go to do on-site intrusion. I've got PCMCI and USB cards for wireless. I've got a stronger antenna. A lot of times you'll end up in places where you can't communicate with a standard 100 milliwatt card. Don't forget your power supply. I've done that before, which is why I labeled it. That way I don't forget again. USB keys and tools. I've got a couple different U3 keys in there that'll do different things. I've got a USB switchblade. Are you guys familiar with those? Switchblade is an awesome, I believe it's Hack5, the people that are doing it. You can go to their website and download it, put it onto a USB key. You plug it into a machine, and about 20 seconds later when you pull out the USB key, it's harvested not only the accounts, the usernames, the password hashes. It'll tell you all of their internet history. It'll give you all of the information off the computer that you would typically sit there and dig with forensics for an hour or two. It's an automated toolkit. It's called Switchblade. Change of clothing is important. If you're climbing around and having to go through muddy fields in order to get to the property, or you're up in the ceiling tiles and you're getting covered in dust, nothing gives you away more when you're trying to get away from a place being completely covered in head to toe in white dust. So I always bring a change of clothing so that as I'm getting ready to leave or as I'm getting ready to be back out where someone may see me, I can change into that clothing to not give myself away. Electrical tools are important if you're trying to bypass things like magnetic sensors for doors or some of the big power locks. You need to be able to do splicing. I find that alligator clips are probably the key, one that I use more than anything. We'll strip back the insulation and you can actually bridge across the connections and the points to where you can open a door, a magnetic door, and it actually will still believe that it's connected. The push bar and baby crowbar are push tool and baby crowbar are great for getting around doors. You see that I've got lock shims there. The lock shims are actually Marriott cards. That's just so I can shim the gates on doors. Some of the things that you look at when you're coming on site and you're just kind of wandering around the property. Are there power boxes for their HVAC and for their server rooms and everything? Are they secured? Do they have locks on them? Can you pick through the locks? Is it something that you need to do? I had a gentleman one time that challenged me and said that he could get into a corporation quicker than I was, and I took him up on it. Funniest thing in the world was he won. And he won because he walked in the building, pulled a fire alarm, and when everybody evacuated the building and started coming back into the building after the fire people had been there and they're all relaxed and they're all grumpy that they've been pulled away from their computers and work, 45 minutes later, he walked in with every single person that was inside the corporation and sat down at a desk like he belonged there. Was it legal? No. Did it work? Yes. In the middle, you'll see those are the standard IR heat-based type sensors. You can manipulate those using hair dryers, doing all kinds of things. Deviant was talking about an example where one of his buddies sprayed rubbing alcohol underneath the door and threw a match. When those detect that there's someone at the door due to fire code, they have to unlock the magnetic seal on the door or allow you to exit. So there are a lot of different ways that you can manipulate that. The door on the far side, that was actually at a secure VA. It was one of the United States government VA hospitals. This was down on like a third floor level into a maintenance area, which was also where they had their server room. And if you look down at the bottom, there's all kinds of gravel and dirt that had been blown down there, and it made it to where the door didn't latch naturally. So unless you pulled the door shut, it wouldn't latch. So it made it very easy for us to get in. We talked about the bridging, which is here on the lower left. And in the middle here, I'm sure you guys have all got doors in different places that have the two big glass doors that come together. That gap, hey, what's going on, bird? The gap that exists in between the two slots there, if you take a piece of steel, you can get little flexible pieces of like sheet metal from Home Depot, Lowe's, whatever you've got. If you shape it like a sharp 7, you can shove it through the gap of the door and pull it back and use it to hit the crash bar on the door, which will then open it from you for the outside. Again, the big thing is look at the way things are designed and try to figure out different flaws. Is your mail locked? Do you have keys laying around that I can take a picture of so I can go home and create my own key? Is there easy access to fire control and security systems? That's a Honeywell security device right there. And then on keypads, are you wiping them down and cleaning them up? As you can see on that one, 1, 4, and 5 are heavily used. You can see where people have been pushing because it's wearing down over time. One of the other tricks that we do a lot of times on the push-button type ones for safes and for doors is you can go and paint them with Tide, dishwashing detergent. When people touch them, it starts wearing down. Cool thing about Tide is that because of the ingredients in Tide, it's blacklight responsive. So if you hit it with a blacklight after a bunch of people have touched it, you can see the specific buttons that are being used. Big thing is, can you get access to cable? Can you get up in the roof and splice the cable, put it into a hub, sit there and sniff traffic, grab VoIP? A lot of different things you can do with it. So execution, we'll run through this really quick. I'm running out of time here. So to hack a bank, we were hired to perform a real-world impact-based risk assessment against a very secure bank. The director of physical and information security was previously employed by the National Security Agency and was absolutely sure there was no way we were going to be able to get in. Primary target was a 9-story brick building. There weren't windows that could be opened or doors that could be opened outside of the primary entrance and the exit until you got to the third floor. The third floor started having balconies. We went to the place. We gathered pictures, walked around on the property, talked to different people, ended up finding out that the data center was on the 9th floor of the building. We developed and deployed CD-ROMs that gave us internal access to various things from our hotel, like I said, calling back out to us, and we walked the stairwells. Can't stress enough how important that is when you're trying to understand a building and being able to figure out your ways of escape. We found out that the 6th-floor door from the stairwell was unlocked, so we figured that we could use that if we got in there somehow, and that all of them except for the center stairwell stopped at floor 8. The center stairwell went all the way up to floor 9, which was where the data center was. The elevators themselves wouldn't take you beyond 8. So it was one of these places where they had thought really, really well about how to segment and separate that from the rest of their business. So we planned approaches, attacks, and backup plans. And here's a video of us. There we go. We decided that we were going to go up to a 3rd-story window that we found that was unlocked on a balcony. I believe people were opening it so they could go out and smoke. And we were going to use the physical access to gain information. So here we are in Lowell's. This is Rich Teener and myself getting different tools. What we're doing here and what we're talking about is that this is a 16-foot extension pole for like cleaning your house or doing different things with. We grabbed one of those little paint holders for like paint brushes. And then used duct tape and a 13-foot emergency escape ladder. And we were going to hook it up onto the 3rd-floor balcony from on top of the neighboring business and use that to climb up to the unlocked window so that we could get into the bank after hours. When we went up at night and we were looking at it, we were driving up and we were going to climb up on top of this exhaust unit that's over there. Now, this neighboring business right here is a restaurant, and the executives of the bank that we were at were actually sitting there at the restaurant while we were doing this. Problem was is the car that we had rented was way too short, and there was no way we were going to be able to get up on the roof at that point. So what did we learn? Again, it's important to make sure that you have plan B, plan C, plan D. So our next plan B, enter, plant, and defeat. We entered the building at 4:30 p.m. before they closed. Right in the middle of a hallway that had a lot of people walking through it, I still don't know why we didn't get asked what we were doing. We lockpicked through about a 3-pin wafer lock, which is exceptionally easy to lockpick into. This is the fire control and elevator control box that's right by almost any big business's front or back doors. Funny thing about fire code, most people don't know this, is that it's absolutely required that you put elevator keys in that box for firefighters in case of some kind of an incident. So we grab the elevator keys out of there, and we use the elevator keys to bypass the proxy card requirement to get to floor 3 that they had on the elevator. Use the stairwell from there to gain access to the 9th floor data center. And this is the video of us going through. Maybe. Now it's not liking me. Let me try one more time here. Nope. Doesn't like that video. I'll play it for you guys another time. But the big thing was is we ended up going up through the 9th floor stairwell. The 6th floor that we'd found unlocked was actually locked. Somebody had caught it. And they had made it to where we weren't going to be able to get that way. The gate for the server room, like I said, I wish I could play that video for you. The gate on the server room itself was actually protected by one of the metal sheets that makes it to where you can't reach through the door gate. The problem was they'd use Phillips head screws to attach the security device. So we back out the Phillips head screws, slide it across, you're able to card the door. Once we were up there, same type of a deal, lock picking and pulling out the core off of a desk lock. This is one of those things that once you've been practicing picking, most of the time you can do these in a couple of seconds. And inside there, we were able to steal a laptop, thousands and thousands of disks of various things from Microsoft, compact release stuff. The picture over here is actually a lockbox that had keys to all of the individual facilities, their vehicles, other areas of the bank, and their data vault warehouse where they've got all of their paperwork. Again, the lock that was protecting all of those very, very sensitive keys is about a 2 or 3 pin lock, very, very easy to pick. On the computer systems themselves, we gave ourselves administrative users. We were able to get access to the different licensing data, and we had unrestricted access to the credit card server that was processing all of their PCI-related data. Here is a video of how we let them know that we'd been there. This video itself is their intranet website. This is a site that they use so that they can look up and see other people that work in different branches. That way, if they get challenged or they need to be able to find someone, they can go and look it up. To let them know that we had been there, we went through and added something special. The 9th floor server and communication room now has a picture of Rich and I standing in their server room. After we were done, we went through, obviously cleaned up, fixed the door gates, fixed the locks. That was another thing that was in the video that I didn't get to demonstrate there. But again, I'll be more than happy to show anybody once we're out of here. I'm just running out of time. But you can use a piece of cardboard to hold open the gate on any large door. And it makes it to where the gate still operates and functions. The door handle still works the same way it would, but it never actually latches. That way you can get back into stairwell doors that you've gone through. That way you don't get trapped inside there. The next morning, we obviously went through and stepped them through step by step exactly how we had done this and helped them start developing a mitigation plan. So stopping the leak, obviously, it's multiple layers. And I could sit here and go through each one of these, but we're running out of time, and I want to be able to have some time for Q&A, so I'm going to kind of punch through quick. But the whole key of what we're talking about here and why we're doing these different types of protections is that you need to think in layers. Such a common model right now is to have a core and to have an external network. You put up a firewall, you've got an internal network and an external, and your internal network is for your business and your external is for the public internet. What we're trying to teach you is that you need to develop individual silos. If you have a financial application or a financial network, there is no reason that your people that are working in HR need to have access to that. Same thing. If you work in finance, why do you need to be able to see someone's personnel or health records? You need to build individual silos and layer upon layer upon layer of protection around each of the different things that are sensitive and secure. Another big one that I do want to touch on, even though I'm running out, is the security awareness training. It is really important that when you do security awareness training that it is not some click box type application where somebody's running through trying to learn about nasty emails and viruses and that type of thing. You need to have some kind of involved, engaged type situation to teach people about the threats. And one of the things that one of my clients has recently started doing is that they have incentive programs based. If you catch someone on property that doesn't have a badge that's walking around and you return them to the security office, they'll give you a $50 gift certificate to go to dinner. Incentive programs are a really good way to start making it to where all of your general people that are out there will actually be, you know, they'll function and operate as a security guard for you. And the big thing, again, develop good, strong policy and procedure. It is important. Make sure that it's applicable and can be applied, that it's not just some template-y type thing. And again, I can't stress enough how important it is. Silo upon layer of security. Think about the old castles. You'd have a moat, and then you'd have a wall, and then you'd have a tower, and then you'd have a vault. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you want. That way you don't have a single point of failure. Any questions? All right. Excellent. Like I said, I'll be more than happy to show you guys the videos, which unfortunately wouldn't play here, and I'll be more than happy to go through any of that if you guys would like to catch up with me sometime at the conference. There's my contact information, and thank you very much.